Welcome to the Kona Edge, where you'll discover what the best triathletes in the world do to give them the edge.
You're listening to the Kona Edge. I'm Brad Brown. Thank you so much for joining us today. And don't forget, time is running out. If you'd like to get your name into the draw for this month's half Ironman entry, all you need to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/win or simply text the word Ironman to 44222 and I'll send you the details right back. Today's podcast, we head to Melbourne in Victoria in Australia to catch up with a guy who's got a pretty phenomenal story. Was sedentary pretty much until the age of 30 and has raced on the Big Island many, many, many times. He's been around the sport of triathlon now for nearly two decades and he's got a pretty cool story to share. We'll head to this Rob Hill in just a moment to find out a little bit more about him. But before we do that, let's head to the coach's corner. Today's Coach's Corner is brought to you by Tri Marnie Triathlon Coaching. For the past 11 years, Marnie and Carl Sumbal have shared a very active lifestyle together. As long-time competitive athletes, they've achieved a number of athletic accomplishments in the sport of swimming, running, triathlon, and cycling. Over time, the athletic hobby turned into a respectable and successful business. Tri Marnie Coaching and Nutrition offers effective coaching and nutrition strategies designed to help athletes achieve healthy habits and athletic excellence. Tri Marnie believes in incorporating scientific research with practical ideologies and applying this information to real-world settings to help triathletes develop and excel on race day. Between them both, they have successfully finished 18 Ironman triathlons and have competed in the Ironman World Championships in Kona, Hawaii, a total of six times. Marnie is a board-certified sport dietitian with a Master's of Science in Exercise Physiology, and Carl is an experienced retool bike specialist, former Cat 1 cyclist, and proficient bike mechanic. Between them both, they have many years of practice, education, and skills from their own athletic careers and now apply that experience and knowledge to athletes of all fitness levels. Tri Marnie offers a variety of services from daily and sport nutrition consultations, sweat testing, retool bike fits, private and group training camps, and coaching. To discover more about Tri Marnie Triathlon Coaching, head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. And don't forget, if you're a coach or if you have a coaching business and would like to get a plug on the podcast, head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. We head to Melbourne now in Australia to catch up with Rob Hill. Rob, welcome onto the Kona Edge. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Brad. It's great to get a chance to talk to you and your listeners and, yeah, appreciate the opportunity.
Rob, I love chatting to folks from Australia because often I chat to people in North America or in Europe and obviously with the Northern and Southern Hemisphere thing, it's either terrible weather where I am and it's beautiful where they are or vice versa, but you're pretty much in the same boat as we are as we're recording this smack bang in the middle of winter.
Yeah, the Southern Hemisphere, it's... Yeah, I think any of us that are fortunate enough to be training for Hawaii, it's tough. Yeah, we're training through our winter and then early spring is often the wettest season in Melbourne, and then we have to get on the plane and head over to Kona and all the Euros and the mainland US people are tanned and coming out of their summer and. Yeah, I think we get a bit ripped off, but oh well, I'm not going to complain.
No, absolutely not. Rob, Melbourne is probably the sporting capital of Australia. I mean, all the big sporting events happen there. I think the Aussie Open tennis, you think of the MCG, massive cricket ground. I mean, they play footy there as well. You've got a big Super Rugby team. It's a great place to live if you do lead an active lifestyle, isn't it?
Oh, for sure, yeah. It's interesting because the weather is not always ideal, as we were saying about winter, and again in summer it gets up into the low 40s on the really hot days, and the dry wind comes off the desert inland Australia, and it can be quite harsh conditions. But there's something about Melbourne, and people love their sport here, and people like participating in the sport too, and. And triathlon has always been big for as long as I've been doing it in Melbourne. And, we were just talking before about Ironman Melbourne, and it has sort of got a lot more interest in people wanting to take part and understanding what an Ironman triathlon is. And, And yeah, even though it's unfortunately it only lasted, I think, 4 years no longer any Ironman Melbourne, but people will still talk about it, and it's still got a lot of people interested in the sport of triathlon.
As far as your interest in the sport, where did that stem from?
From very modest beginnings, Brad. It's I did no sort of regular exercise at all until I turned 30, would you believe? And I was pretty unfit, and I loved to drink, and exercise didn't really, you know, come to me as something that I should be doing. And all of a sudden I hit 30 and thought, I want to start running around the block. So I headed out the door in my basketball shoes, and I think I made it down the end of the street and had to walk back. I was so out of breath, and that was day one. And I was 35, and a couple of years into doing some shorter triathlons, I ended up deciding to do the big one, the Ironman triathlon. And so it was a pretty rapid improvement to the level where I could take on a long distance triathlon.
Rob, what was the attraction to triathlon as a sport? I mean, you mentioned going out the door and deciding you wanted to run. Being unfit, taking on one sport that takes a bit of athletic abilities is pretty tough. What was the thinking about doing three?
Look, I think for a lot of us, you know, if we're the obsessive types, and I'd say if I was going to sum up triathletes, we tend to be obsessive types. I think having a race that we can compete in that has a swim, then a bike, then a run, there is nothing more satisfying than that. And my first triathlon back in 97, it was a team event, and we all had to swim, bike, run, and then hand over the band to the next team member. And everything went wrong for me, and yet I got to that finish line, and it was the best thing I'd ever experienced in my life. And I thought, this is a sport for me. So I think just that, and every race I've done since, and I couldn't count how many triathlons I've done, but that feeling is still there, that even if it's a short sprint race, or if it's a half Ironman or an Ironman, doesn't matter. Just, getting in the water to start the race, and then, onto the bike, and then finishing with a run. There's something about it. And as we probably saw with the history of the sport, and where many years ago duathlon was quite big, but it's really died off because it doesn't seem to have that, that satisfaction of getting to the finish line when you've done three sports in the one race.
Yep, absolutely. Rob, as far as growing up, I mean, Australia is a very sort of active, outdoorsy sort of country. You said you weren't active until you were about 30. Growing up, did you partake in sport at school and that sort of thing? Were you active at all?
I was one of those kids that, if I could get out of sport, I would. I didn't show much natural ability, to say the least. And my father was a very good sportsman, and he played cricket at through school and university, and then got into golf and had a handicap of one, I think, and was considering turning professional. And but he had a view that you were either born a good sportsman or you weren't. It wasn't something that you could work on and become good, which was an interesting mindset, and it's certainly one that I don't have. And so I grew up, and I had a bit of asthma, like a lot of kids do, and that sort of made it that much harder anyway. I couldn't really run without getting out of breath, and I just thought, well, that's me. I'm not athletic. I never will be, and sports is for other people. And it was only when, as a sort of in my late teens and becoming a young adult, I sort of a few life lessons where I realized that, hey, my dad's view wasn't necessarily the way things are. And, I loved him. I looked up to him, but, eventually you get to that age, you think, well, some of his views were a bit different. I don't agree with them. And, I think part of the buzz for me was proving not my dad wrong, but proving me wrong, that I could actually become a good athlete.
How often is that the case, though, where someone says something and they don't even realize that they're having that impression on you, but you turn around and go, you know what, I think I'm different, and I'm going to, not necessarily, like you say, prove them wrong, but how big a driving force that is. I mean, I met a doctor back in 2010 that said to me, I'm crazy to think of running ultramarathons, and less than a year later, I was on the start line of one of the biggest in the world. So, yeah, sometimes you just need someone to say you can't do it for you to actually go out and get that fire in your belly to get it done.
I agree, Brad. I think, for some of us, maybe us belligerent ones, we love nothing better than being told we can't do something. And, yeah, but I think for me it's certainly probably more my previous personal view of myself that I couldn't do it, you know, as much as anyone else telling me I couldn't do things. But, but it fires me up even now. You know, if someone sort of just even infers that I won't be able to achieve a goal I've set myself, then – yeah, almost guaranteed. I might not achieve it, but I'll be doing everything possible to get close.
I love that. Rob, when did you realize you actually had some ability and you were pretty good at this thing?
Well, when I started running, it was pretty much to try and, you know, just clear my head, because I was studying part-time at that point. I was working full-time. And so I was I couldn't study after work. I was too sort of mind dead. So I was getting up very early in the morning to study before I went to work. And I just found it really hard to wake my brain up. So I ended up, that's when I started the running around the block. And then the running around the block got longer and longer. So suddenly I'm doing like 10-kilometer runs, but, you know, at 4:30 a.m. in the morning, and it was dark and no one's around. So I never came across, or very rarely came across, anyone else running. So I couldn't compare myself to anyone. So for the first couple of years, I was running on my own and had no idea if I was good or bad or anything. And it didn't matter because I wasn't doing it to compete. But I started getting dragged into some competitions from guys at work who were into running and into triathlons. And straight away, I realized that, hey, compared to others, I'm actually pretty good runner and, you know, despite starting so late. So, yeah, that was right early on, at running at least, I realized I can be pretty good at this.
And as far as racing on the Big Island and getting there, you have to have a bit of a competitive streak in you. Would you say you're pretty competitive? Do you hate losing?
I think I suppose in a way I do hate losing if I know that I could have won, if that makes sense.
Yep.
When I started out and I did my first Ironman and I came 100th in my age group and I was like 770th overall, and that was Ironman Australia back in 2000. And, a lot of friends of mine, they had this dream that, you know, they got into the sport because they wanted to race the Hawaii Ironman. And I remember watching it as, you know, a teenager with my dad and saying, these guys are crazy. You know, they're running a marathon after riding through the lava fields and that, you know, just insane. But I never had this day. And then when I started in triathlon and then did my first Ironman, I just didn't think I'd probably ever be good enough to do it. So it wasn't really a goal. But then I'm the sort of guy that if I enjoy something, I want to unravel the mysteries of it and work out how you succeed in it. And so I wanted to get better. Yeah, not to race Hawaii, but I just wanted to get faster and have some results I could be proud of. And before I knew it, I was started off in that 35-39 age group, and then when I started looking at the 40-44 qualifying times for Hawaii, I realized that, hey, yeah, I only have to improve another 10 or 15 minutes in an Ironman and I'm right up there, you know, with a chance of getting a Hawaii slot.
As far as that first Ironman of yours that you mentioned, I mean, you've been around the sport for a while now, but the first one, you go into it, you just don't want to die. That's, I think, for most of us, that's the goal. But, I mean, time-wise and splits-wise, do you remember what you did in that first one?
Vaguely. I was pissed off at the finish line. And I think the main reason was I'd never run a marathon. And I still haven't. I'm up to 20-something Ironmans, and I've never done a straight marathon. But that first Ironman, I thought, I'm not only going to be doing my first Ironman, I'm going to be running the first marathon. So it was, you know, both of those were big things to me. And I ended up, I think I swam an hour five, and then I biked 5:30, which for many years was my quickest bike speed. So obviously overbiked, as a lot of us do. And then, I was able to run through the first 14 kilometers, and then I just couldn't take another step running. I was in, I don't know if it was dehydration or, biking too hard, I'm sure was a factor. And not training properly. Back then, no one had coaches. No one, I was trying to read magazines of, getting tips from Greg Welsh, who said that, you've got to go out and do, 6 hour bike rides at your Ironman pace and at for training to know you're ready. And I couldn't do that, and I would never get, I'm coaching some guys now, I would never get my athletes to go out for a 6 hour Ironman pace bike ride because it just does your head in. On race day you can do it, but I was so ignorant. I was naive and didn't know what I was doing. I knew one guy in Melbourne who had done an Ironman, and he wasn't giving much away. So I went to that race and, but I ended up, I walked for the second 14 Ks, and then I finally recovered enough to, run the last 14 Ks and, stormed home and thought, that was a soft effort, Rob. I was down on myself, but the next day I woke up and I was satisfied. And I think that's the secret of the sport that I've learned is that you've got to have if you really want to reach your potential and improve and achieve some good things, you've just got to get a right balance of satisfied with your result when you know you've given it all you could, but not too satisfied where you don't hurt a bit inside, which is then your motivation to want to improve for next time.
But isn't that one of the great things about Ironman? Because it's so long, the odds of you having the perfect race where everything goes according to plan, it's pretty slim. So there's always something sort of left and some unfinished business you may feel after a race.
Yeah, for sure. And so many, variables, so many sort of dials on the computer, so to speak, that we can turn, whether it's the nutrition knob or it's the training volume knob or the intensity knob, to try and find that thing that's going to work for us that'll give us that improvement.
Absolutely. Rob, how's the sport changed? You mentioned, I think you said early 2000 was your first Ironman. Things have changed a lot. In your opinion, is it for the better? Is it for the worse? What are some of the good things? What are some of the bad things?
Okay, look, it's never clear cut, and I can see positives and negatives with the changes over the last 17 years in Ironman. And look, back then, and certainly in Australia, it was sort of run for the athletes, and the race used to be Ironman Australia used to be in a place called Foster Tuncurry, a small sort of twin town, and almost too small to have the race because it was hard to get accommodation. If you wanted to go to a local restaurant in race week, you had to go early in the week because closer to the race, they were all full, and it was really, it was quite different. But the organisers and the race director, and it was all about their love of the sport and love of the athletes, and it wasn't just about the money. So that's probably been the biggest change, that for the sport to grow as big as it's got, and for us to have the opportunity to race in so many different locations and do an Ironman race. And let's face it, the Ironman brand, they do put on a good race. We know what we're getting. We know that it's going to be generally very well run, and that you're going to be looked after quite well. But to spread as much as it has and to have all of those new opportunities to race in different places around the world, the downside, I suppose, as well, it had to become a lot more of a commercial concern. And now, it's a billion-dollar brand. And, unfortunately, the athlete is sort of, maybe not first, it's second after the dollar, maybe. Prices have gone up. The experience in doing an Ironman, I still think, is fantastic. And, I just like to see a lot. It'd be great if it was more competitive and, challenge had made a big push into competing with Ironman, and especially a temporary sort of push into the US. But yeah, it's hard, and Ironman are playing a tough game and protecting their turf and putting their races up against the challenge races. And yeah, it hasn't been easy for challenge, but I think it's better for the athletes. It's better for everyone other than perhaps Ironman if there's a bit more competition, but hey, that's the way it is. And at the end of the day, you know, being able to race in Ironman races, and you know, they do put on a good race, and hey, that's, yeah, you know, it's not all downside, the changes, but yeah, I just think that it'd be great to see a bit more exposure for the professionals. It'd be great to see, you know, better coverage, and you know, there's been a lot of criticism about the streaming of races, and especially the championship races and the 70.3 world champs. And yeah, you know, Hawaii's always had good coverage as far as sort of an hour highlights or whatever. But yeah, I just think, you know, let's promote the sport more. Let's, you know, it'd be fantastic to get it, more visibility with mainstream public. But, yeah, I'm sure it's not easy, but.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the challenges they are facing, I think. Ben, as far as keeping the passion going, we often see it in the sport, and I'm sure it's the same in Australia, because it definitely is that way here. People burst onto the scene, and they're all gung-ho about the sport, and they burn themselves out. 2 or 3 years down the line, they're gone. Yep. You don't see them again. How have you managed to stay fresh and wanting to stay in the sport for as long as you have?
I think, my expectations early on, as I mentioned, were pretty low. I just, I was training with quite a few guys back then, and, they were all about 10 years younger than me, which did me the world of good, because, you know, it meant that I didn't get ahead of myself, and, they would kick my ass in, training and often on race day. And, it kept me humble, but, I think it's so important, and I really stress with the athletes that I coach that the main thing I want out of all of them is for them to embrace that lifestyle long term and get the health benefits and the mental health, not only physical health benefits from the sport, but also, you know, it's a tough sport, and you know, we probably all know guys that have had problems with just doing too much and needing an extended break from the sport because of injury or illness and just really wearing themselves out. And a lot of guys, and when I say guys, it's, you know, it's the boys and the girls, you know, it's everyone. It's, you know, we get impatient. That's human nature. And we want, whether it's a Hawaii slot or it's the win or whatever it is, we want it tomorrow. We don't want to wait for a number of years. And Ironman really does reward patience, and to get good at Ironman, unless you're just a born natural, and I certainly wasn't, you know, it took me, I think I did 6 Ironmans before I first qualified for Kona. And as I said early on, my first Ironman, I was 100th in the age group, and, you know, thinking of ever one day qualifying for Hawaii, it was a pipe dream. I didn't think it was going to happen.
What is the secret to qualifying, in your opinion? For the answer to that question and more premium Kona Edge content, head over to thekonaedge.com/support and stand in line to win an entry into a half Ironman event every single month, valued at $350. That's thekonaedge.com/support. Rob, looking at getting the sort of work-life, family, training, racing balance right, it's one thing many triathletes struggle with. How do you tell me a little bit about your sort of domestic life and work life? What's the story, and how do you keep things in check?
Well, I'm living the dream now, Brad. I'm 12 months into leaving my corporate job of 33 years, and taking on coaching full time. So
I was going to say, it's like you're a pro athlete, Rob.
which has disadvantages. I finished up work last July, and I thought, fantastic, I've got Kona coming up and the 70.3 World Champs in Bulula, and I've got all this time to train. And I knew so many people that had been in the same situation that have ended up getting injured or burned out or whatever. And I thought I was being smart. And, yeah, but I ended up I had a pretty good race in Mooloolaba, but and I had a pretty good race in Kona, but both races I just felt a little bit flat. And in hindsight, I'm sure that, I hadn't freshened up enough on race day, given the increase in training load that I'd taken on. And I was, getting extra sleep, extra recovery, extra massages and all sorts of stuff, which I thought would counteract the extra volume I was taking on. But, looking back on last year, it didn't work as well as I would have liked it to. But look, I had all of those years in balancing my training with a demanding corporate job, and I think there's a lot that I learned from that which I pass on to my athletes now, which is you've just got to work out a way of how you can be efficient with your time, with the classic thing of getting on the bike and doing an hour or two and then riding into work for your commute and having a shower at work and then hitting the desk, things like that that you can fit a lot more training into your day if you just work out what's going to be most efficient for you with your time. And, things like getting out for a lunchtime run if you can, and things like that, because, we all have families and we have other commitments and obligations. So you don't want the sport to start to detract from other things that are, or should be and are going to be more important to you in the long run. So work out a way of – I used to find, early morning is the one time, no matter how busy you are at work and what, deliverables you've got on and pressures from the boss and whatever else, the early morning was the one time that it was my own. So, I'd set the alarm nice and early every morning during the week and get up and get on the bike for a couple of hours or go to swim squad or – something like that where it was my own time. And then once I got to work, then whatever happened, happened. And that took a lot of pressure off. And then weekends, you can get the long rides in and the long runs and the stuff that you have to do for preparing for an Ironman. But, I think for nearly everyone on the start line, they're doing pretty similar stuff every weekend. And, a big part of what separates us, the sort of front of packers to the people further back, perhaps how much they can get done in the rest of the week, the Monday to Friday.
Yeah, and it all comes down to just planning properly. And you're so right about the early morning stuff, because as soon as you put a, and it happens to all of us, as soon as you put a workout off and go, oh, we're not going to do it this morning, we'll do it later this afternoon, things bleed into that time. And how many times is it the case that you never actually catch that workout up again, because things get in the way and life does get in the way. So it is vital. Yeah. Rob, as far as your sort of triathlon career, what would you say is something you're most proud of looking back at it so far?
Good question.
I'm guessing that the Kona Edge is not the only podcast you listen to. If you're anything like me, you probably listen to a ton of different podcasts. I think at the moment I have 10 or 15 go-tos that I listen to every single week. And if you listen to a lot of podcasts, at some stage you've probably thought about starting your own. Well, the good news is it's easier than you think. ThePodcastingAcademy.com is giving you the opportunity to get your own podcast started right now. The Podcasting Academy is a 21-day, step-by-step online program that will get you from zero to podcast in just 3 weeks. Right now, thepodcastingacademy.com is offering listeners of the Kona Edge a 25% discount. All you need to do is use the word Kona at checkout to qualify. Head over to thepodcastingacademy.com to find out more.
I think definitely qualifying for Hawaii the first time was really important to me, and as I said, I had no expectations when I started in my Ironman journey and let alone my triathlon journey. But given that, yeah, my dad and I used to watch it on TV on a Saturday afternoon and talk about how crazy they were. And he passed away about 6 or 7 years ago. But fortunately, he was alive for the first 3 or 4 Ironmans in Hawaii that I did. And, yeah, he knew it was a pretty big deal. And so I think out of everything that I achieved, that was that meant a lot to me. And, yeah, it was pretty special to get to go over there and race against the best in, yeah, what I see as the ultimate triathlon.
The flip side of that coin, what's still left to achieve?
yeah, we've always got to keep raising the bar and having new goals. And look, I've been fortunate enough to have been quite successful racing here. And in the last couple of years, I've raced in Ironman New Zealand, and before that was racing Ironman Melbourne for a number of years, and picking up some age group wins, and yeah, feeling like I'd come close to the perfect race, as we were talking about before. But yeah, definitely Hawaii is the holy grail, I suppose, of feeling that I'm really competitive there. And yeah, I'd love to get up on the stage as top 5 in the age group. And once I achieve that, I know that it'll be gunning for that number one position one day. Yeah, my best result in Hawaii is 15th. And yeah, I've got a bit of work to do there. It's not an easy race. And if it was easy, it wouldn't mean as much to me and everyone else who does it.
If I say the word Kona, what do you think of?
I think of the place and the people, to be honest. And I mean, I love getting over there and, you know, coming from Melbourne winter and, you know, needing to acclimatise. Over the years, I've ended up sort of going there earlier and earlier almost every year. But I love it's so quiet and peaceful for the first week or two, and then race week just gets crazy, you know. So someone mentions Kona to me, I think of, the palm trees and the heat and the, you know, just the sleepy little town that it is for most of the year. And, the race is almost like this foreign thing that happens to the place, but at the same time, the race is a beautiful thing in itself.
Absolutely. Well, Rob, it's been great catching up. I look forward to chatting to you about the individual disciplines, but we'll save that for next week. Thanks for your time today.
Not a problem, Brad. Great to talk.
And that's it for this edition of the Kona Edge. Thank you so much for joining me today. And thank you very much, too, for everyone who has left us iTunes reviews. They keep coming, and it just really helps us spread the message of the podcast and get in front of more and more people. If you haven't left us one yet, please consider doing so. It really does help us grow this podcast and grow the sport that we all love so much. Go on in from Linosaurus X. I love that name, in the United States, saying one of the best tri podcasts there is. I love Brad's take on interviewing top age groupers. Brings a different perspective for us average folks and keeps us hopeful that we can probably make it to the Big Island someday. If not, we'll be all right living vicariously through others' experiences. Linosaurus Rex, X, rather. Thank you so much for that. Much appreciated. And, we look forward to giving you a shout-out after you've left an iTunes review online for us. Thank you so much for listening. We're back again tomorrow with another edition. Until then, from myself, Brad Brown, cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.